Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion, it's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Unlimited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, is Ethan Sachs. Ethan, it's that time of year. New set is out, and we've got previews to talk about.
Yeah, baby. We are recording. I mean, we're basically live here. We're just going to like roll through as quick as possible. We're going to try and do a one and done recording tonight because we wanted to wait till Monday. We wanted as many previews of commons and uncommons from Crimson Vow as possible. And I'm glad we waited because we got a big dump of commons and uncommons today.
Heck yeah, we did. I was thinking I was caught up and then I got home from school and I was like, wait, I haven't seen that card.
Yeah, so lots to talk about here. You know, we sort of started to get to do these kinds of episodes a few sets ago, and we maybe had to like backtrack. Like we had like a really long preview season for Strix, really short for AFR, and now we're back smooth sailing here with the Innistrad sets in the fall, fresh off the heels of Halloween, and I can't think of a better way to spend November 1st than talking about these cards with you.
I am looking forward to it. Let's dive in.
Yeah, so a little bit of housekeeping things to do before we get into all these previews, talk about the new mechanics and all that good stuff. First things first, the Patreon page, of course, patreon.com/lordsoflimited is where you can go to give back to the show if you so choose. Lots of goodies over there if you're interested in giving back to the show, all the way from, you know, getting access to the Lords of Limited Discord, which we say is the place to be for a new set. So you've got about, I don't know, a week or so before you can hop into the Patreon and get into the Discord there, all the way up to getting access to monthly coaching sessions with me or Ben. I just, you know, it's November 1st and that's the time when I send out all my emails to all of my monthly students and try and schedule stuff. And that's a really great perk if you're interested in that. So Patreon, I think, is a really great place. It definitely keeps the show going, as we said. And of course, each and every week, we want to welcome our new patrons to the fold. And this week we are welcoming Austin, John, Tian, Andrew, Jonathan, Wizard of the Third Coast, Fatty Chopper, and Tyler. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Yeah, cannot say thank you enough. And I just want to reiterate, new set, best time to get in on the Discord. It is unreal how much goes on at the first week of the start of a format. So looking forward to seeing all you new folks flooding into the Patreon as well as the Discord. And thank you to everyone that's already there. The show is also brought to you by Channel Fireball. ChannelFireball.com, best place to go for anything and everything you need magic related. They've had Marketplace Madness going on lately, but that is finished. But you should not be done shopping at the Channel Fireball Marketplace yet, as well as me. I want to shout out a listener. We, you know, you floated this idea on air about getting me a starter of each basic. And I want to thank Norman, aka Talus Engineer. They reached out to me over Discord and sent me one of each beta basic. So the quest has begun and I'm going to be perusing the Channel Fireball Marketplace.
So what do you need now? Like 9 more of each to feel like you've got a good set that you can use for your limited decks?
I think that's probably true. So we'll do it slowly and steadily wins the race. Yeah.
Yeah. Big shout out to Talus Engineer. That's an awesome gift. I think that's great. And I hope this maybe injects you with a little bit of buying madness yourself.
Yeah. And much like you all should be doing when I buy those beta basics from the Channel Fireball Marketplace, I'm going to be using code LOL all caps. You better believe it to let them know that I was from the podcast.
Yeah. Great. Before we dive into the new mechanics and the card previews, I did want to touch briefly on the Ravnica Mixer format that is on Arena through the 5th. If folks are checking that out, if you're feeling like Innistrad Midnight Hunt is a little stale, and talk about this, because I know I've been jamming drafts of this. I told you I was addicted to it, and I know you've been drafting it a little bit this weekend, and maybe just to throw out a little, like, you know, fast and loose primer on what our thoughts are.
Yeah, I think you've done way more than me. From what I've seen, I've done 4 of these now so far, and I think the gates are pretty high priorities. I don't think you want to necessarily be married to colors, because I've been in some pods where it feels like people know what's up with blue, black, and red. So I think see what comes and draft your gates and try to build a good, powerful deck. It's felt a little more like Sealed on steroids to me than anything else.
Yeah, or I'd say like Chaos Draft. So for folks who don't know, you get like a pack of Guilds of Ravnica first, then a pack of Ravnica Allegiance, and then a pack of War of the Spark third. And yeah, I would say that I think the best decks for my money are when you get just like powerful stuff, get gates to cast all those powerful things, and then even get gate payoff, so you have some synergy there. But I've definitely seen some, you know, really good two color decks. You got to draft a Nutso Niv-Mizzet pack one pick one into just like Is It Being Wide Open deck. I drafted for the first time an aggro deck today. I drafted a Boros deck that went 4-3. It was, you know, fine, lost to some draws or whatever, but, you know, was able to piece together a good streamlined two color deck, I think, from the 3-pack. So you can really do a lot of different things, but I think, yeah, ideally you're drafting the Grixis colors, you know, you're starting blue black, you're taking gates, you're getting gate payoffs, you're 3 of 5 colors. But it's been a really fun format. I did get kind of dumpstered today in my drafts. So maybe people are catching on, or like after the weekend, everybody who maybe people that who tried it a couple times were like, eh, I'm done. And now it's just the hardcore people playing the format now. But yeah, I've been enjoying it, and I'll be definitely playing it for the next few days.
Yeah, it has been a boatload of fun. And I will say that it feels refreshing to have one pack of each different set and to kind of be able to plan ahead for packs 2 and packs 3. I mean, that was how you and I both got started on Limited, and that hasn't been the case really since we've started the podcast. So it was a cool change of pace to get, you know, a pack of each going through.
Right. We started with, I guess, no, the second set we did, right? Ixalan, and then Rivals of Ixalan is the last time they ever did like the big set, small set type deal.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Let's get into these new and returning mechanics for Innistrad Crimson Vow. First up, we've got a new mechanic, Training, which is sort of like reverse mentor, having played some Guilds of Ravnica this weekend. So Training says, whenever a creature with training attacks alongside a creature of greater power, put a +1/+1 counter on the creature with training. And so the reason this is basically like Mentor, that was the case, but Mentor was a bigger creature attacking with a smaller creature. The bigger creature had Mentor and could add a counter to the smaller creature. But I think the big key difference here is that the keyword is on the smaller creature, not the larger one, so it can stack. So if you have 3 training creatures and then one creature that's larger than all 3 trainees or whatever, or trainers, will get a counter.
And so we've got an example of a card here, Apprentice Sharpshooter. This is 2 and a green for a 1/4 human archer with reach, and it has training. So whenever it attacks with something with more power than 1, it's going to get a +1/+1 counter and turn into a 2/5. That's going to get annoying in a hurry.
You had me at 3 mana, 1/4 reach.
Just no extra text needed.
Yeah, no extra text needed. Yeah, I mean, this turns into a 2/5. And the cool thing about this is that, like, as a 2/5, it's probably pretty hard to kill in combat, right? Even a double block may not kill this.
Right. And it sets you up to leverage combat tricks because people are going to be trying to double block it while they still can. I don't know. Like, people were saying that this is awkward on a 1/4, but I think a 1/4 that turns into a 2/5 when it attacks and then probably a 3/6, it's a fair card.
Yeah, I think this looks good to me. And I think, I mean, it's partially because more training stuff than perhaps other color pairs has been previewed. Like, green white seems to be humans and training, and I think we've not seen a lot of other color pair stuff, but the green white training deck seems pretty well supported. It also kind of reminds me of Evolve in a way, of like, I remember like high toughness, low power, or vice versa was sort of good for that. Obviously, you want low power for training, but just like that kind of low power, high toughness creature that can grow is going to be really hard to interact with.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
I know you love this mechanic. Yeah, why don't you talk about it?
Yeah, next mechanic up is Cleave. This shows up on instant and sorcery cards, and it offers you an alternative cost. So when you're casting a card with Cleave, you can cast it for its mana cost as normal, and if you do, the spell's effect gets processed just like it normally reads on the card. So every single word of rules text is followed just like you'd expect. But if you pay the cleave cost, instead you could ignore all the words in brackets. So this took a while for my brain to process, and I'm going to try to give a shortcut to folks out there because I think this is a bit of a clunky mechanic. The text in parentheses is always going to be a drawback, right? So when you cast it for its normal cost, that's going to be cheaper than the cleave cost, and you're going to have some sort of an effect with a drawback. And then when you cleave, you get to cleave out the words in brackets and get a better effect. So you're paying more for cleave and getting a better effect.
Yeah. So for example, we've got a card, Dread Fugue. This is single black for a sorcery. Target player reveals their hand. You choose a non-land card from it with mana value 2 or less. That player discards that card. And then it has a cleave cost of 2 and a black, which allows you to remove the with mana value 2 or less text. So it's just, you know, Thoughtseize or whatever, sort of a targeted discard effect. So cheap, you know, play it on turn one, nab their 2-drop, and then later in the game, you can just cast it for its cleave cost to get whatever you want out of their hand.
Yeah, I'm realizing now that we're podcasting that cleave is also extra clunky for podcasting.
Cleave is going to be very clunky for podcasting. I have a feeling we'll probably figure out some shorthand way to do it. But yeah, the way we just read it was... that's a toughie right there. Maybe we have to say brackets, or I don't know what we're supposed to do.
It's the worst.
But I mean, there's been a lot of hate on this mechanic on social media already, so I feel like we don't need to pile on. It'll be fine. This is a good limited mechanic. This is just like another form of kicker, I think, right? As the Tolarian Community College video sort of surmised there. So I think that this is going to be good. That's like modality is good for limited.
100%. Yes. Even if it is clunky, I will take modality however I can get it.
All right, we got a new kind of token here. So, you know, clues, treasures, food, and now blood tokens. This is a colorless artifact token with pay one, tap, discard a card, sacrifice this artifact to draw a card. So basically, one mana rummage.
And we've got an example of a card here in Gluttonous Guest. This is 2 and a black for a 1/4 creature vampire. When this enters the battlefield, create a blood token. And whenever you sacrifice a blood token, you gain 1 life.
You had me at 3 mana 1/4, baby. I'm just loving these high toughness creatures. So this is interesting, right? So it plays like this sort of discard effect, plays great with Disturb, though there's, which, spoiler, sorry, is back in this format, but with a twist. There's no flashback in the set, it looks like, right? That wasn't a mechanic that they previewed in the article. So I assume there's no flashback. We haven't seen any flashback cards yet. And there's no madness either, but... like just literal like seconds before recording the podcast, I was like, let me just make sure that I've got all the previews that we like want to talk about. And they had just previewed this uncommon that is kind of like Madness Light. What's this card?
This is Edgar's Awakening. It's 3 black-black for sorcery and says return target creature from your graveyard to the battlefield. Then it's also got more text. Whenever you discard Edgar's Awakening, you may pay black. If you do, return target creature card from your graveyard to your hand. So it works super well with Pseudo Madness, except you get a little bit of a different effect. Instead of returning the creature to the battlefield, when you discard it and pay a black, it goes back to your hand.
Yeah, I wonder if we'll see, like, so it's like, yeah, so like one is like a Zombify, and then the Madness, whatever light effect that this is basically a Raise Dead effect for, you know, old school players. So I wonder if we'll see, like, you know, a Griptide effect in blue, and then the cheaper one is just an Unsummon effect, like if it's going to be sort of like, you know, bigger effects, and then sort of like a mini less card advantagey effect for the reduced cost. But I was super happy to see this. I don't know what this, yeah, what we're going to call this, because it doesn't look like it's going to be keyworded, but this is effectively Madness, and you need stuff like this to make these rummage effects feel powerful, you know?
Yeah, I'm very excited about this. I hope there's a whole cycle of those. One for each color would be awesome.
Yeah. Daybound Nightbound is back. I know you're excited about that.
Hey, whatever. It's medium. It's fine. I mean, maybe yeah. It'll be good this format now that we're not in the werewolf set.
I know. We'll see. Well, we'll get to that in a little bit later. There's some like werewolves or wolves that just look better in this set than any of the ones we had in the last set. Disturb is back. But what's the twist here?
They're all going to come back as auras on the backside. And this preview card I am in love with. This is Kindly Ancestor. This is 2 and a white for a 2/3 spirit with lifelink, and it has Disturb for 1 and a white. And then when you disturb it, it's an aura, Ancestor's Embrace. Enchanted creature has lifelink, and if it would be put into a graveyard from anywhere, the usual disturb text, exile it instead. So all of these things basically take the creature on the front side, and the enchantment is some sort of homage or piece of the front side of the creature. And I think this is going to be a house in limited.
Yeah, I mean, this is probably now a good time to jump ahead a little bit to our disturb section of the show notes. and just maybe run through some that are super exciting. I think Lantern Bearer looks sweet. This is a single blue for a 1/1 spirit at common, which has flying. So a 1/1 flyer for one. And then it has Disturb for 2 and a blue. And it comes back as an aura that grants flying and gives +1/+1. That is a pretty darn good aggressive one drop.
Yeah, I really like that card. There's another one that's an uncommon here. This is Distracting Geist. 2 and a white for a 2/1 spirit. Whenever it attacks, tap target creature defending player controls, and it has Disturb for 4 and a white, and the enchantment gives a creature that ability. Whenever this creature attacks, tap target creature defending player controls. That is a very aggressive white drop.
Yeah, and then, you know, we just got a nice common here. It looks like Baithook Angler 2.0. It's Drogskull Infantry, 1 and a white for a 2/2, just straight up, and then has Disturb, 3 and a white, and the aura is enchanted creature gets +2/+2. Now, I want to ask you, or maybe we should just talk about, like, this is just inherently less powerful than the Disturb cards coming back as creatures, right?
Yes, sort of. Yes. I mean, in a way, I guess, but it is also, I mean, auras inherently are high risk, high reward, right?
Yes.
Like, so this Disturb thing removes the risk aspect of the aura to a certain extent and just gives you the reward part of it. So, I mean, these are going to demand answers. Like, they're fundamentally easier to answer in that a removal spell will cleanly deal with the aura once it's been placed on a creature, whereas Disturb was constantly 2-for-1-ing you in Midnight Hunt. But I think depending on the scenario, some of these auras are going to feel like, oh, God, this is awful, you know?
Yeah, that's true. But, like, you know, I don't want to say this. Like, you know, Drogskull Infantry, like a 2-mana 2/2 or a 1-mana 1/1 flyer. Those are, like, low-rated cards, right? And I guess you could say the same for the Disturb cards from Midnight Hunt, except that it feels like then I was like at least happy for, all right, well, the back half is an evasive threat. The back half being an aura is, I think, still significantly worse.
By and large, I would agree. Yes, I think by and large, if you want to put it in a bucket, this is less powerful, but it will be interesting, I think, to play with these. I'm looking forward to it a lot.
I am too. I mean, again, they are still inherently quote unquote 2-for-1s. I just think that, like, the two things you're getting are less exciting than the two things we got from the first Innistrad set.
Sure, but it's also going to be interesting with threat of putting the aura on things too. Like, I think that's going to be an interesting gameplay thing, right? Because you're going to be trying to hold up instant speed removal to blow your opponent out when they go to cast the aura on their creature or whatever. And so it'll be interesting to see how that little mini game plays out, because you know the aura is coming at some point, right? But then can you afford to leave mana up? What if they have other things to do other than play the aura? So that's going to be weird with the auras in the graveyard, knowing they can be played at any time. I think that'll be cool.
Yeah, I agree with that. And obviously they're going to provide value. You know, we don't have flashback, but we have this. So provide value if there's any sort of self mill, obviously being able to, like, you know, you use your blood tokens, discard these, you're still sort of, you know, you're getting a spell in your yard that you can cast at a later point. How valuable that spell is, we'll have to see. But yeah, I mean, Disturb was a nice aggressive tempo deck in Midnight Hunt. And it looks like with auras being the name of the game, it feels like it can also be an aggressive tempo based deck in this new set too.
Right. And I think one thing just macro that I would expect, I think, based on these all being auras, you know, last time removal sort of went down a little bit, right? Because it played out so poorly against the Disturb creatures. With these being auras, that makes me want ways to interact with my opponent's creatures.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we'll be able to look at the removal that we've seen so far as well. Our last returning mechanic is Exploit, which is back, but not back from the set we just played. I think this was originally in Dragons of Tarkir, that block. But this is an effect that's on creatures. When a creature with exploit enters the battlefield, you may sacrifice a creature, and if you do, you get an effect. So for example, what do we have here?
Rot-Tide Gargantua, 3BB for a 5/4 with exploit, and whenever it exploits a creature, each opponent sacrifices a creature.
Yeah. The thing that I'm really looking for that I haven't really seen yet is sacrifice fodder. Like, I mean, obviously, Decayed Tokens would just love Rot-Tide Gargantua and all these exploit creatures. But we've seen, like, we'll look at one card a little later, but that's the real thing that you want to see is, like, stuff that you don't mind sacrificing. If you're just, like, straight up sacrificing a creature, sure, sometimes that'll be good. You know, some of these have better effects as you move up the rarity rankings, but it remains to be seen how, prevalent this will be.
And that's where Disturb is inherently less powerful this time around, right? Because normally you'd be fine sacrificing a Disturb creature, but it's a little more awkward to, for example, sacrifice a Disturb creature to an exploit creature, and then you're only getting an aura on the backside. You're not actually adding to the board with another creature.
Right. I believe that, like, and we haven't seen the signpost yet, but I believe Blue Black is going to be like zombies slash exploit. I don't think we've seen exploit exist in any of the red, green, or white colors or the cards that have been previewed in those colors yet. So that's where I think this will be at home. So remains to be seen what the fodder will exist there. But maybe, yeah, maybe some of your blue disturbed creatures.
That takes us on to some uncommon build around cards here. So first up, we've got a Spells Matter card in Whispering Wizard. What's going on there?
Okay, so Whispering Wizard is an uncommon 3 and a blue for a 3/2 human wizard. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, create a 1/1 white spirit creature token with flying. This ability triggers only once each turn. That's pretty exciting to me, I think. Like, only triggering once each turn is maybe a little bit of a bummer, but maybe it would get out of control. Obviously, 4-mana, 3/2 body isn't that great, but, you know, Organ Hoarder made it work, and maybe Whispering Wizard can too.
Yeah, I'm a little worried about how clunky this is, right? Feywild Trickster was 3-mana for a 2/2, and it didn't play out great for sort of a similar effect. It just depends on how good the spells deck is and where this slots in on the curve. I could see this being anywhere from good to not particularly excited about it.
Yeah, that's fair. I think I'm gonna be, I guess, maybe cautiously optimistic. That's probably where you're at too.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely hoping this card is good.
Next up, we've got, I am curious to see where these blood tokens slot in, and I think they're definitely gonna go well with this card. What's going on with Wedding Security?
This is a bouncer for sure. 3 black, 4/4 vampire soldier. Whenever Wedding Security attacks, you may sacrifice a blood token. If you do, put a +1/+1 counter on Wedding Security and draw a card, baby.
Yeah, that's wildly powerful. I mean, I guess you need to be able to attack with it. So maybe, you know, they just get to block with their 3/3 and their 2/2 and you're not interested in doing that, but you still get to draw a card.
Yeah, I mean, and you're going to have removal in black. I think this card looks like a house. Again, like one thing that has been apparent to me from Midnight Hunt, and who knows if that's going to carry on going forward, but the good cheap cards are better than the good expensive cards. And that just got hammered home in my brain in Midnight Hunt. So jury's out for me on this one, but it does look overtly powerful on first read.
Yeah, so we're just all in on the blue 1-mana 1/1 flyer disturb. Just get those one drops in, baby. So a lot, like I said, has been previewed for this green white humans counters card or counters deck. The first up is Laid to Rest. This is 3 and a green for an enchantment. Whenever a human you control dies, draw a card. And whenever a creature you control with a +1/+1 counter on it dies, you gain 2 life. So, you know, we've seen the training mechanic is going to be putting +1/+1 counters on stuff. And also that mechanic is in green white, and green white is where you're going to expect to see the bulk of your humans. What do you think about this card?
I don't love it. I don't want my things to die, especially if I don't have a sacrifice theme to get value out of them.
Yeah.
I'm not in love with this card.
I wonder if this is maybe going to be like, seem like it's green white, but then maybe it's more of a green black, like get your exploit stuff, and maybe green provides some exploit like saproling tokeny stuff, some sort of fodder, I guess. But then those aren't humans, are they? They're saprolings. Maybe they get some humans. I don't know. We'll see. Yeah, I'm kind of with you. Like, if green-white is the aggro deck that it usually is, you don't usually want a 4-mana do-nothing enchantment.
Well, right. Or if I've done work to get +1/+1 counters on creatures, I don't want them to die. I don't know. This doesn't seem great to me.
I feel like we don't have a clear enough picture yet. I'm holding out hope for this.
That's fair. And it could be the type of card, once it hits the battlefield and your opponent's attacking you and you realize every time you block, you're getting 2-for-1. You're just like, oh, this card is unbeatable, you know?
Right.
But
right.
It looks medium to me right now.
Yeah, like it's not capped on, this only triggers once per turn, right? If 3 of your humans die, you're drawing 3 cards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Resistance Squad is up next. This is 2 and a white for a human soldier, and it's a 3/2. Whenever Resistance Squad enters the battlefield, if you control another human, draw a card.
So like not quite a build around, but definitely like a clue to like, this is what white decks, I think white green decks are going to want to do is, you know, have like when you're like 3-mana 3/2 is not a good body, but when it cantrips, that's pretty darn good.
How much better is this than Search Party Captain? I'm not even convinced that it is that much better.
That's a good take. That's a pretty darn good take, because basically Search Party Captain was a 3-mana 2/2. That drew a card.
And sometimes a 1-mana 2/2 that drew a card that had no other conditions other than you attacking. This wants you to control another human. It'll probably be easy to curve into this if you build your deck right. But I mean, I think this is a good card. It's not busted.
Sure. I think that's fair. Like, I think it's a synergy card. And I agree that like Search Party Captain probably better, but that does not make this card bad.
Right. But this is more of the type of card where you're going to want to pick it up after you're in the deck. This doesn't pull me into a human soldier deck, you know, on first read.
Yeah, that's fair. And I hadn't thought about that. The like Search Party Captain just was like, you have to attack. That's the work you have to do. And this is like, you got some more hoops to jump through. And this will always cost three, whereas Captain could cost two or one, as you said. So yeah, it's an interesting comparison for sure. Last up here in the sort of counters matter theme, this card may not quite get there, Ben. This is Dormant Grove, three and a green for an enchantment at the beginning of combat on your turn. And it's interesting, a lot of these cards, they're not at the beginning of your upkeep. They're not at the beginning of your end step. A lot of these cards that trigger at the beginning of combat, which is sort of a newish thing, but put a plus and plus one counter on target creature you control. Then, if that creature has toughness six or greater, transform Dormant Grove, and it turns into Gnarled Grove Strider, which is a 3/6 treefolk creature with vigilance that gives all of your other creatures vigilance as well.
It did seem like there was a Butts theme roaming around. I don't know if it was rares I saw or what, but I do think that is a theme in the set.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's why I wonder what the color pair is that it might be seeded into. Maybe green black gets to be Butts. I don't know.
I don't remember, but I saw another card that cared about Butts that was not this card. So it must have been a rare because I didn't see it looking through the show notes.
Yeah, I will only put all the commons and uncommons spoiled so far in here because who cares about rares? I never get to open good rares. Do you?
No, obviously not.
Yeah, for sure.
Never open Niv-Mizzet.
Never.
Yeah, so I think this is pretty mediocre, but, you know, maybe have a home in if there is a Butts deck in that Butts deck.
I mean, I guess, like, you know, you attack. Okay, so you attack with your 1/4 reach trainer with something with a 2/2, whatever. It's a 2/5. You play this, you put a counter on it. It's a 3/6, and now this is a 3/6.
Yeah.
It's not like hard to imagine that happening.
Right, but are you interested in doing work to get a 4-mana 3/6?
With Vigilance?
With Vigilance? I don't know.
Isn't Vigilance your favorite mechanic?
It is my favorite limited mechanic after Lifelink. I think Lifelink's number one. Vigilance is my number two limited mechanic.
I don't know. We'll see. This does look pretty slow to me, but if there's a Butts thing going on and you can, like, if this can trigger, like, the turn it comes into play, 4-mana, put a counter on something, and it's a 3/6 Vigilance, that is a good card. How often you get to do that, I have no idea.
Right. Next up, we've got a little A plus B action, a little Ox Plow action going on here. We've got Groom's Finery. This is 1 and a black for an artifact equipment. It says, equipped creature gets +2/+0. It gets an additional +0/+2 and has Death Touch as long as you have an equipment named Bride's Gown attached to a creature you control, and the equip cost is 2.
And we don't know what Bride's Gown is yet. It hasn't been spoiled.
We don't, but this is really flavorful, right? Like, I don't care about flavor, and I saw this, and I was like, oh, that's cute.
Yeah. So I assume that also Bride's Gown, I mean, that definitely sounds like an equipment, right? It's like something you wear. So I assume that would also be an equipment, probably in white, maybe, though maybe it'll also be black. Because it's, I don't know, because of, well, it's Olivia getting married. I don't know. So we'll see. These are usually like more cute than good when you get them together. This is like you're working for a 2-mana equipment, 2 to equip, +2/+2 Death Touch.
I mean, that's a good equipment if you get it. It just depends on what Bride's Gown does. And if you're interested in an aggressive deck, if you're interested in the +2/+0 equipment, and Bride's Gown is good, and then both things together are good in an aggro deck. I don't know. I could see it being playable. We'll have to see what Bride's Gown does.
And I wonder if there'll be like a third thing that like lets you find them. You know, that often happens when you have these sort of trinkety things that are clearly, this is clearly for limited, right? No one else is going to care about this. So I wonder if that'll end up happening. We'll see. One last thing for this human counters deck is Cloaked Cadet. This is 4 and a green for a 2/4 human ranger with training. And it says, whenever 1 or more +1/+1 counters are put on 1 or more humans you control, draw a card. This ability triggers only once each turn. So a pretty understated card, but a pretty powerful effect.
Yeah, and I mean, if you assume when this attacks, it's going to turn into a 3/5. It's like a 5-mana 3/5 that's going to draw you a card. I don't know. Again, this is, I'm wary of what looks to be a very powerful 5-mana card, right? I think we've just seen time and time again in recent limited years that cards like this end up being less impressive than they would compared to the super efficient commons. Like, think about something like Phantom Carriage, right? That reads super powerful, but you're taking Organ Hoarder over that. You're taking...
That's not really a fair comparison, but
Revenge,
yes.
You're taking Revenge of the Drowned over it. You know, you're taking maybe flip the switch over it, depending on how focused of a deck you have.
Yeah, I think that's a totally good point. And the other thing that I want to point out about these training cards, like, I mean, I obviously have an affinity for 3-mana 1/4 creatures with reach, but that is like, that's the stat we expect for that kind of a creature, right? And then it has training on it. And that's like, well, that seems pretty good. That seems like pushed, like you're getting an additional thing. Cloak Cadet, that is a small creature. Like, sure, it's got some synergy, but like you're paying for a very understated body that then has to have some work to get you to like feel like you're getting some power there. So I agree. I think I am skeptical of this card.
But I mean, if you're getting the +1/+1 counters, like if you play this and then have attacks, and if this is a 5-mana 2/4 draw two cards or something, I mean, you're in for that, right?
You're saying it triggers the turn it comes into play and then it attacks and is a 3/5?
Right.
Yeah, I'm definitely into that. But like, I guess my question is, would you just rather be like beating down with a 5-mana 5/5 vanilla in a deck?
I agree. That's where my head's at as well. So jury's out for me on this card, and I think I am leaning towards maybe not quite as good as it reads. Like, it reads powerfully again, but these 5-mana cards like this have just underperformed a little bit pretty consistently in recent sets. Mm-hmm. Next up, we've maybe got an exploit payoff here, or a good thing to sacrifice to your exploit cards, rather. So this is Bioloom Egg, 2 and a blue for an 0/4 with Defender. When it ETBs, you scry 2. And when you sacrifice Bioloom Egg, return it to the battlefield transformed under its owner's control at the beginning of the next end step. And it turns into Bioloom Serpent, which is a 4/4, sac 2 islands. Bioloom Serpent can't be blocked this turn, is the ability on it. So pretty good here. I mean, this is made for exploiting if something is.
Is this even that good? I guess, like, it's eventually, I guess it can just, like, 8 your opponent in the, like, you get them down to 8.
Is this even that good? This is great, right?
I don't know. It's there's so much setup cost. You have, like, so 3-mana 0/4 Defender ETB Scry 2. That is not a good card. So you have to have exploit, or maybe there's other sacrifice stuff that we haven't seen yet, but I assume it's just exploit. So you have to have exploit for this, which that is good. And then you get this back as a 4/4. That's great because you're also getting your exploit effect. And then, yeah, like at least your opponent has to while this is on the battlefield, your opponent has to operate under the assumption that they are at 4 less life than they normally would be, and potentially 8 less life.
I'm going to put you on the spot here. Give me a grade on this card right now.
I'm gonna go Synergy B.
That's where I'm at. Synergy B, that's a great card, right?
That's a good card. Yeah, I just had to talk. Look, we're doing this on the fly. It's Monday night. I'm just trying to keep up, Ben. Yeah, I had to talk through it. I think it's good. It's just, I feel like, so it's got to be a secret blue-black-gold card, right?
Right, and it's the type of card you should be expecting to get late if you've carved that deck out for yourself. Like, you're not drafting this and then drafting the exploit deck. You're in exploit, you have good exploit cards, and you're like, sweet, nobody else wants this Bioloom Egg. I guess I'm going to take it, 6th pick.
Yeah, all right, I'm into it.
And I think the Serpent is a house.
Yes, yeah. I mean, just that's effectively you're like 3-mana 4/4, which is probably just a good stat line in the format period. And then, yeah, I think like in the late game, you're just like, what are you at? Okay, sac 2 islands.
Right. Well, and normally those type of cards to do that, you're taking your whole turn tapping mana. You're going to be able to do that while casting other spells until you've gotten rid of all your islands, obviously.
Yeah,
then they're dead.
Yeah, for sure. The last build around here we've identified is Archghoul of Thraben. This is 2 and a black for a 3/2 zombie cleric. When it or another zombie you control dies, look at the top card of your library. If it's a zombie card, you may reveal it and put it into your hand. If you don't put the card into your hand, you may put it into your graveyard. So you get a little like surveil action if it's not a zombie. This really, I mean, look, if blue black is like zombie / exploit, this really will keep the gas flowing. If you're like sack a zombie to exploit and then look at the top card, if it's a zombie, great. If not, like you get to, you know, sort of manipulate the top of your deck a little bit.
Yeah, I like this card. Seems fine to good in a zombie deck that cares about exploiting or things dying.
All of these, like, why 3-mana 3/2s? Why is that the stat line? Can we
so
go back?
So that there's enough power to block all the 3/6s running around thanks to the training ability?
I guess. Yeah. I just want the 2/3s to be able to block the 2-mana 2/2s, you know, is that too much to ask?
All right. Moving on to some signpost uncommons here. We've got the green white signpost uncommon already in Sigardian Paladin. This is 2 green white for a 4/4 human knight. And it has, as long as you put 1 or more +1/+1 counters onto a creature this turn, it has trample and lifelink. and you can pay one green white to give target creature you control with a +1/+1 counter on it, trample and lifelink until end of turn.
So this is reading a little clunky because this card was previewed in not English. So we're going out by the translation, which feels a little off to me just to start. Like the tracking, as long as you put one or more +1/+1 counters onto a creature this turn, it has trample and lifelink. Like that's going to be easy online, but in paper, what a nightmare.
Yeah, it's not great.
That's not great. So maybe that's not quite the templating, but that's what we're going off right now. So 4 mana, 4/4 with fairly significant upside. 1 green, white, target creature you control with a counter on it gains trample and lifelink until end of turn.
Yeah, I mean, the counters, the creatures with the counters are the ones you want to make big and give trample and lifelink to, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Again, maybe you're right about just like, you know, the 4 drops and the 5 drops are less exciting than the 1 drops and the 2 drops these days.
Yeah, we'll have to see. I mean, that one seems fine to me.
Yeah. Next up in blue-white, we've got, blue-white auras. Brian Comer is 1 white-blue. That also just sounds like someone's name, like Brian Comer. 1 white-blue, sorry, Brian Comer. 1 white-blue for a 1/1 spirit. Whenever Brian Comer enters the battlefield or becomes the target of an aura spell, create a 1/1 white flying spirit creature token with flying. Okay, so 3 mana, 1/1. When it ETBs, you make a 1/1 flyer. Anytime you target it with an aura, you get a 1/1 flyer. And remember, all the backside of disturbed creatures are auras. Like this one, it has disturbed for white blue, and it has enchant creature. Whenever Brinebound Gift, that's the backside, enters the battlefield, or enchanted creature becomes the target of an aura spell, create a 1/1 white spirit creature token with flying. So when you cast this as an aura, you also get a 1/1 flyer. And then every time you cast an aura onto the creature that this enchants, you get a 1/1 flyer. It's kind of like Ominous Roost, right? It's like a build around that's going to pump out a bunch of 1/1 flyers that can actually block this time.
Yeah, this card is going to be annoying to play against for sure. And I'm nominating this to already be called Brian. It's a done deal.
Just Brian. Okay.
Just Brian.
Brian Comer. Okay. A little bit of a clue that this color pair can grind as well is Dawnheart Geist. What is this?
This is 1 and a white for a 1/3. And whenever you cast an enchantment spell, you gain 2 life.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. Enchantress decks always appeal to me. And this is like...
You just love clunky, terrible cards and getting 2 for 1?
Like when green-white Enchantress is supported in... No, because it's like you get the cantripping effect too. So you sort of like build these engines and you can have these explosive turns. Now, I'm sure we're not going to get that to that extent in this format. But I for some, whatever reason, whenever you cast an enchantment spell, I'm like, oh, go on, tell me more. And I don't know, but like, I feel like we thought that Disturb in mid was going to be grindy, and it obviously could be, but it played out much better as just an aggro tempo deck. And so then this doesn't really seem like it fits that. So I don't know. I don't know where this is going to fit in that kind of deck.
Well, I mean, this is definitely slotted for the back half of Disturb, right?
Yes. Right. But so like, but how, like, are you going to be like, sick, got Dawnheart Geist, now my deck can really compete? Or is this just, I think maybe this is just a trap as a 2 mana 1/3.
Yeah, or just like a nice little incidental piece of value. I mean, it's probably not a key piece to your deck, would be my guess.
Yeah, for sure.
Next up, we've got blue-green Selfmill and Vile Spawn Spider. So this is green-blue for a 2/3 spider with reach. At the beginning of your upkeep, you mill a card, and then it has the ability 2 green-blue, tap, sacrifice Vile Spawn Spider, create a 1/1 green insect creature token for each creature card in your graveyard, activate only as a sorcery.
Release the spider spawning cut, you cowards. Like, stop giving me these little flavors of like Ghoul Caller's Chant at rare, or this like making 1/1s that don't even have reach. You're telling me Vile Spawn Spider doesn't make spiders?
I mean, this is nowhere near as good as spider spawning.
I know. That's why I'm mad. I just want something that's that good.
And a huge part of the reason that deck was great was Gnaw to the Bone, right? Like, that deck was nothing without Gnaw to the Bone.
Sure, but so then then I'll build Bant Auras and I'll have my, 1/3 buddy that we just talked about. I don't know. This card is obviously good. 2 mana, 2/3 reach with upside. Self mill is going to be good if you've got, any disturb or whatever other graveyard shenanigans that are going to be in this set. I'm excited about this card, but... And I hope there's more, this definitely points to Selfmill. I'm sure there will be more green and blue cards coming, maybe hopefully slightly less powerful than Farmer and Organ Hoarder, that'll help fuel your yard. But yeah, the 1/1 insects, they're all right.
I mean, to be clear, this is a very good card. I mean, and it does everything you would want it to do. It turns itself on, assuming you're playing it in a deck with whatever, 15, 16 creatures, which you probably should be. I mean, you're going to mill the creatures. They're going to die in combat. And then ideally, theoretically, you're cracking this to make whatever, 5, 6 insects, which is powerful.
Yeah, for sure. There's a lot of blue cards spoiled so far, Ben. Let's talk about them. What's up first?
We've got Diver Scob. This is 3 blue for a zombie, 3/5 with exploit. And it says whenever Diver Scob exploits a creature, target creature's owner puts it on the top or bottom of their library.
Heck yes. As long as this exploit deck is supported, then I think a card like this is awesome. I think this is the kind of card that I'm into paying 5 mana for because it affects the board.
Right. And so we should talk about with exploit with Diver Scob. I don't think we've mentioned this yet, is that it can also sacrifice itself, right? So if you're hard up and you don't have another creature that you want to sacrifice, you can just play this as 5 mana, play the Diver Scob, sack it to itself, and then, you know, put target creature on the top or the bottom of your opponent's library.
Right. I mean, it's like a sorcery speed, totally lost, not great, but you can do it. So yeah, we keep talking about what's the sack fodder. Well, the creature itself can be the sack fodder. But yeah, I'm into Diver Scob for sure. Next up, we've got Scattered Thoughts. This is 3 blue for an instant at common. Look at the top 4 cards of your library, put 2 of those cards into your hand and the rest into your graveyard. All right, I'm kind of into this at instant speed.
It's powerful, that's for sure. I mean, if there's other good things to do at instant speed, I mean, this is going to be game breaking in the late game, assuming you're stable or not in imminent danger of dying.
Yeah, picking 2 of 4 and then potentially getting to bin something that has synergy in the graveyard, either a disturb thing or whatever creature you're going to reanimate. Like, yeah, I'm into this. I don't know how many. It'll be interesting to see how high up the common rankings this card ends up being.
Be a little better if it had a 3/2 body attached to it. I don't know.
I know. I was just thinking that.
it just puts it into perspective how dumb Organ Order was.
Yeah. And we're like excited. We're like Scattered Thoughts. Looks good.
Next up, we've got Lunar Rejection. This is 1 blue for an instant, and it has Cleave for 3 blue. So if you pay the 1 blue, return target wolf or werewolf creature to its owner's hand. If you cleave it for 3 blue, return target creature to its owner's hand. And then both times you get to draw a card.
Yeah, so, you know, very, very good against wolves or werewolves. Again, wolves or werewolves not being able to catch a break, even in the vampire set. And then, but normally just like 4 mana, bounce a thing, draw a card. You know, that's 2 modes on Cryptic Command. That's kicked into the royal, whatever. Like, bounce a thing, draw a card. That's a good card.
Yes, I think it has been set dependent on how powerful that is, because we've seen that effect flop sometimes or not be totally premium. But I think this is a powerful card.
Yeah, I agree.
Next up, we've got Soul Code Tablet. What's going on here?
This is 1 blue for an artifact at uncommon. It enters the battlefield with 3 omen counters on it. It has 1 blue, tap, look at the top 2 cards of your library, put 1 of them into your graveyard. Then it says whenever a creature card is put into your graveyard, you remove 1 omen counter from Soul Code Tablet, then transform it if there are no omen counters on it. So either a creature's going to the graveyard from this, you know, ability, this tap ability, or from the battlefield, whatever. Maybe from your blood tokens, discarding creatures. And then the flip side is a 3/2 flyer that can only block creatures with flying. And it has the activated ability 3 blue, draw 2 cards, discard a card.
I mean, the back half of that is a very good card.
Yes.
So assuming you can jump through those hoops, depending on how easily you can do that. I mean, if you've got other self mill outside of the Soul Code Tablet, that's when I'm definitely starting to be interested in this.
Yeah, I think it remains to be seen. I mean, obviously, speed of the format. This has like, I don't know, this has, what's it called? Heirloom Mirror vibes to me a little bit. Like, I just wonder if this is just too clunky.
But this looks better than Heirloom Mirror because you don't have to invest the mana in the Soul Code Tablet, right? Like, just creatures can go to your graveyard from combat, or, you know, you play a card that mills 4 cards and you mill 2 creatures or whatever. It's going to be easier to transform this.
That's fair. That's fair. I guess like it just depends. I think it still does depend how good / prevalent bounce is, because like I think Heirloom Mirror could have had whatever that somehow it flipped in different ways without mana investment. And then you would still go, yeah, but Revenge of the Drowned.
Right.
So I don't know. We'll see. Jury's out for me here.
I'd buy it. There's also some potential loops here in Witness the Future. This is 2 blue for a sorcery. Choose target player and up to 4 target cards in their graveyard. That player shuffles those cards into their library. Look at the top 4 cards of your library, put 1 of them into your hand and the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order.
Okay, so we're always on the lookout for the loops here on Lords Unlimited. We're always trying to just chase that devious cover up, clear the mind, life. This is an uncommon, so it makes it a lot harder, right? Because you need two of these, or you need this and something else that does a similar thing. But the fact that this does replace itself is makes it better. Like that makes
it gives you some selection.
Clear the mind adjacent, right? Gives you selection. But you know, you're not just going to run one of these in a deck, right? You want to be playing this with the idea of doing loops, right?
Yes, I think so. And this is not going to be a high pick. You're either going to get these. I mean, and it will, the second one will be a high pick if you're trying to do the thing. But like the first one, you're wheeling and then you're thinking, oh, maybe I could do this if I see another one or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Or if there are other pieces. But I hope so. I was sad to see that loops wasn't really a thing in the last set.
They teased you.
They did tease me. All right. Last up here in this blue card category is Geist Light Snare. This is 2 and a blue for an instant. Costs 1 less to cast if you control a spirit and 1 less to cast if you control an enchantment. And it says counter target spell unless its controller pays 3. So potentially a 1 mana leak is flip the switch back, Ben.
No, this card's fine. I mean, this is not even as good as flip the switch.
No, it isn't. Not even close. Yeah.
And we should go into why. Because it looks better, right? Because it could cost 2 or even 1. But the no decayed zombie token on this is a big deal. When you stuck flip the switch, you got a 1.5 for 1 or close to a 2 for 1. You're just going 1 for 1-ing here. You're going to have to leave up the mana. You have to do work to make it cheaper, and it's not going to be cheaper until late in the game. I don't know. I'm low-ish on this card.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think this card is fine and will probably be a higher-ish pick in blue-white, but even then, I don't think it's going to matter that much.
For sure. All right, that takes us on to the better wolves / werewolves, which you alluded to a little bit earlier. So red's got Fearful Villager. This is 2 and a red for a 2-3 with menace. And then on the back half, it turns into Fearsome Werewolf, which is a 4-3 menace. So still worse than Shady Traveler in black.
That's very funny. I hadn't thought of that. So worse than Shady Traveler, but better than the Harvesttide, whatever, the 3-2 Trampler that turned into a 4-4 Trampler. Like, why is there a better werewolf in this set than in that set in red?
Yes, and why are both of Red's werewolves worse?
Worse than a black werewolf. Yeah. Don't know. A card that I am kind of excited about, Packsong Pup. We'll have to see like if this deck is good or if it's supported, whatever. But 1 and a green for a 1-1 wolf at uncommon. At the beginning of combat on your turn, if you control another wolf or werewolf, put a +1/+1 counter on Packsong Pup. And when it dies, you gain life equal to its power.
Yeah, this is a nice little doggo.
Yeah, this is a good little threat, I think, coming down on, you know, I mean, maybe on turn 1, you won't have a 1-drop wolf as well. But, you know, this is going to be a card that in the right deck demands to be dealt with. Now, it remains to be seen if that right deck is a deck you want to draft. We'll have to see.
It's interesting that they made it a 1-1 because a lot of times cards like this are 2-2s. So maybe it was just too pushed as a 2-2. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe it came down and was a 3-3. Who knows? Yeah, we'll have to see.
All right, that moves on to reprints. We've got Syncopate reprinted. This is blue X for an instant. Counter target spell unless its controller pays X. If that spell is countered this way, exile it instead of putting it into its owner's graveyard.
So the first time we saw Syncopate was, I believe, original Ravnica, right? And uncommon. And then it was reprinted at common in Dominaria many years ago. And now we have it again at common. I don't know. I'm not a Syncopate fan. I guess we'll have to see how much blue wants to operate at instant speed. That'll make this a little better, but I don't know. I don't love it.
But Syncopate is better than Geist Light Snare, right? The counterspell we just discussed?
I guess. Not necessarily. This, like, I don't know. You have to hold up so much mana, and then the times you're holding up all the mana, sometimes you're just priced into countering something when you don't want to. I just have bad memories of Syncopate.
I agree. It's awkward.
Yeah.
We've got Abrade back at common. This is 1 and a red for an instant. Choose 1. Abrade deals 3 damage to target creature, and you could destroy target artifact.
Interesting. So I wonder, like, are we supposed to be blowing up blood tokens? Like, why is this a common?
I don't know, but I'm into it.
Yeah, I'm into it too. This is just good, efficient removal. Another good removal spell reprinted here is Valorous Stance. 1 and a white for an instant at uncommon. Choose 1, target creature gains indestructible until end of turn, or destroy target creature with toughness 4 or greater.
Card's great.
Yeah, not really much to talk about. It's nice to have a little combat trick plus, or save your creature from removal spell, plus removal spell itself.
Yeah, that takes us to some new removal. We've got a pacifism variant in Sigarda's Imprisonment. What's up here?
Okay, 2 and a white for an aura, enchant creature. Enchanted creature can't attack or block, but 4 and a white, exile enchanted creature, create a blood token. So it's got some like flavors of Dreadful Apathy from Theros Beyond Death in that respect.
Yeah, I mean, the four and a white is a little excessive. And then I was like, okay, they threw me a blood token, but could we just get that down to three mana maybe?
That seems a little, I mean, that's just like strictly better than Dreadful Apathy. I don't know. I'm not going to write this card off just yet, even though that would be my inclination. I don't know. Maybe I'm just too much of a candle trap apologist, but I think this card might be fine.
Exploit is in this format.
That's true. Yeah, exploit's in the format. That is a yikes. All right.
That's a huge yikes, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's one deck, really. I mean, I guess you might have some flavors of it in some blue-white decks or some black X decks. So, yeah. Yeah, maybe it's just terrible. You think it's just terrible?
I don't know that it's just terrible, but I think it is certainly not premium. Like, I would put this more in the candle trap category than anything else off the bat.
Yeah. All right. That's fair. We've got a red uncommon burn spell. It's just good. Rending Flame, two and a red, instant. Deal 5 to target creature, planeswalker. If that permanent is a spirit, Rending Flame also deals 2 damage to that permanent's controller. I'm not really sure. Where's the vampire hate? Huh? Like, we're hating on spirits. We're hating on werewolves. Where's the vampire hate?
Yeah. I mean, it's the wedding. It's the vampire's day in the sun.
But werewolves got wrecked in the werewolf set.
I know. Yeah.
Where's the where's the clove of garlic artifact that just kills a vampire?
Yeah, we'll have to see. There is a non-vampire pyroclasm effect in Vampire's Vengeance, so no more vampire hate, more vampire benefits. This is 2 and a red for an instant, and Vampire's Vengeance deals 2 damage to each non-vampire creature, and you create a blood token.
Yeah, that seems great to me. I mean, maybe it's just a sideboard card, but in a vampire's deck, this is just great.
Yeah, you just main deck that.
All right, that's going to take us on to our last, and certainly not least, segment here. My favorite, great or garbage, Ben. What's up first?
We've got Bloodsworn Squire. This is 3 and a black for a 3/3 uncommon vampire soldier. You can pay 1 and a black, discard a card to give it indestructible until end of turn, and then tap it. Then, if there are 4 more creature cards in your graveyard, it transforms into Bloodsworn Knight, which is a star, power and toughness equal to the number of creature cards in your graveyard. So at least a 4/4, because it only transforms if there are 4 more creature cards in your graveyard. Uh-huh. And then has the ability, 1 black, discard a card, Bloodsworn Knight gains indestructible until end of turn, and tap it.
So the same. So it has the same ability on both sides, but only flips if you have 4 creatures after you do the ability once.
Yeah.
This is a lot, buddy. I can't quite clock this. It's funny. We're looking on Mythic Spoiler and there's some people allude. They're like, oh, it's like a bigger Seasoned Hallowblade, which I feel like you should take offense to.
Yeah, this card is nowhere near as good as Seasoned Hallowblade.
My guess is this card is not good. And my feeling is it might be good depending on the amount of those pseudo madness cards we see. Like, do those exist at common? Then I could get down with this. I don't know. This just seems like it's a lot of work.
Yeah, I don't love this card unless you have cards you are actively interested in discarding for a benefit. And even then, this is pretty clunky at enabling that.
Yeah, I'm going garbage.
I am also going garbage.
Next up is Retrieve. 2 and a green for an uncommon sorcery. Return up to 1 target creature card and up to 1 target non-creature permanent card from your graveyard to your hand. Exile Retrieve. What do you think?
I mean, it's a 2-for-1. I don't love it. I think it's playable, certainly. It's like a C.
Yeah.
It's neither great nor garbage.
I want this to be great, but I'm sure it isn't.
This is definitely not great, but it's also not garbage.
It's probably just garbage, though. So what are the non-creature permanent cards that are getting into your graveyard? I mean, I guess lands?
Oh, it's about non-creature permanent card.
Yeah.
This is garbage.
It's just garbage, right? Like, so you're like discarding your land to your blood token and then drawing a card. And then it's just like, just play divination. Like, you're working too hard for your 2-for-1s.
I am certain of 2 things about this card now. It is garbage, and you are 100% Ethan Sachs going to be casting some retrieves this format.
Oh, that's clear, but I need to do our listeners the service of me doing do as I say, not as I do, you know?
For sure.
Next up is Allenbach Escort. What's this card?
This is white for a 1/1 human monk with vigilance, and it has the ability Sacrifice Allenbach Escort. Target creature you control with a +1/+1 counter on it gains lifelink and indestructible until end of turn.
This is not the one drop we're looking for, right? This is a constructed plant.
Yes. I mean, maybe in the nuts, green, white, humans, +1/+1 counters deck, you're going to be into this card, but I don't love it, no. I mean, it does wear Aura as well. But then you have to sacrifice it? I don't know.
Why does it wear aura as well? Because it is vigilance?
One vigilance, yeah.
No? Get out of here. I don't think so. I don't care. I don't really care about that.
All right, garbage.
Yeah, I think garbage. All right, this is the moment you've been waiting for, Ben.
Heck yeah, it is. This is Magma Pummeler, Red Red X. This is a 0/0 uncommon elemental, and it enters the battlefield with X +1/+1 counters on it. If damage would be dealt to Magma Pummeler while it has a +1/+1 counter on it, prevent that damage and remove that many +1/+1 counters from Magma Pummeler. When one or more counters are removed this way, Magma Pummeler deals that much damage to any target.
Okay, so I think this card is bad.
Yeah, I am in love with this card. This card is great. So this is like a thing that comes in a 2/2 and deals 2 damage, right? Except it can be bigger. You would pay 4 mana for a 2/2 that deals 2 damage on ETB. Yes?
Yes, I would do that.
Right. So, and then this also could be a 5 mana 3/3, 6 mana 4/4. So at rate, and I mean, yes, it doesn't do the thing on ETB, but this is going to be awkward on the battlefield to play around. I think when this hits the battlefield as a 3/3, you're just going to feel terrible about attacking into it, right? It's going to trade with something and then shoot something else down. I think this card's really strong.
I guess. I just think like you, I guess it just depends what the red decks look like. I'm just so wary of stuff below rate. And I feel like I say that a lot on the show and on stream and blah, blah, blah. But I'm just really, you know, I feel like you're talking about, you know, we just got to be wary of, you know, these things that look really powerful and we're paying 5 mana for, and they're just worse than one drops. And yes, this is scalable, but I feel like, and especially the smaller this is, this is a 4 mana 2/2. Maybe it's hard to attack into it, but not with a, like you can attack into it with a 3/3 and it's fine or whatever. And it depends what other stuff is on the board. But it's more that like, this feels like it has to stay back a lot because you can just, if you attack with it, then okay, whatever. I take 2, I take 3, and now the ground is clear for of this annoying thing. Obviously, yes, again,
I agree that this is not an aggressive card, but this is basically Moat. I think once this hits the battlefield, your opponent attacking is going to stop.
Moat has been announced. All right, we'll see. I'm glad we're on the same page about it not being an aggressive card. Yeah, maybe it just comes down and totally brick walls the ground. I don't know.
Yeah, but if you're in a defensive deck, I am into Magma Pummeler for sure.
All right.
Now, is Red going to have a defensive deck? Who knows?
Yeah.
But I think in that spot, this is a powerful card.
Next up is another flip card. This is interesting. This is Radiant Grace. It's an uncommon single white aura. Enchanted creature gets +1/+1 and has vigilance. When enchanted creature dies, return this to the battlefield, transformed and under your control, attached to target opponent. Comes back as an aura curse, Radiant Restrictions. It enchants a player. Creatures enchanted player controls enter the battlefield tapped. What say you, Ben?
This is a hard one because my gut reaction is that this is garbage.
Me too.
But it's an uncommon, and I could see it getting there in an aggressive deck, maybe. Like if you put this on a flyer and then they have to deal with the flyer, I don't know. I don't love it.
Yeah, I think I'm on just firm garbage here. It feels like another constructed card.
Yeah, but is it even good in constructed?
I don't know. There isn't like mono white like the best deck right now or something. I should not be answering any questions about constructed.
Moving on. Next question, yeah. Please. Next up, we've got Innocent Traveler. This is 2BB for a 1/3 uncommon at the beginning of your upkeep. Any opponent may sacrifice a creature. If no one does, transform Innocent Traveler into Malicious Invader. This is a 3/3 flyer, and it gets +2/+0 as long as an opponent controls a human.
So when I initially saw this, it reminded me of, I think it was like Cloistered something. I don't know, from original Innistrad. It was like 1W for a 1/1.
Oh, Cloistered Youth, yeah.
Yeah, and then you, I think at the beginning of your upkeep, you could like, oh, if when it, you could flip it and it flipped into a 3/3 that dealt you a damage at your end step. And I
except
thought
that cost 2 mana.
Right, but I didn't look at the mana cost first, and I was like, oh, 1/3 flips into a 3/3 flyer. Oh, okay. Well, this reminds me of that card. I bet it costs 2. It costs 4 mana? Like, that's so bad.
Yeah, it's not good.
It's not good. Talk about being understated for what you're paying for. Yeah. I mean,
and if your opponent doesn't want you to have the 3/3 flyer, they can sacrifice creatures to keep you on a 4 mana 1/3. I mean, this card is very bad.
It does sort of depend how much sac fodder there is. But I guess if there's exploit, there has to be.
There has to be sac fodder. And like,
I think green white is trying to go wide.
The 4 mana 3/3 flyer was the business. That is no longer a case. Like, do you really want to play a conditional card that maybe is going to get into turn into a 3/3 flyer for 4 mana?
No. Clunk City. We'll go garbage here.
City. We've not had many great cards. I've only defended Magma Pummeler so far.
That's true. That's true. All right, last up here, I think this is going to get another garbage vote. This is Skulking Killer. 3 and a black for a 4-2 Vampire Assassin at Uncommon. When it enters the battlefield, target creature an opponent controls gets -2/-2 until end of turn if that opponent controls no other creatures. What?
That is a weird clause.
This card makes me really mad because it's like, oh, are you behind on board? Get wrecked. Like, the times when this does do the thing, it's going to feel really bad. But, like, how often is this doing the thing?
It's not doing the thing very often at all. This card is firm garbage, and we should just call our segment garbage or garbage.
Garbage or garbage. Magma Pummeler could be great, I guess. No, I did also.
It's situationally good, maybe. I don't think it's going to be great. Situationally good for Magma
Pummeler. 4 mana, 4/2? Oof.
Yeah, Skulking Killer is no bueno. I think you're never putting this card in your deck, right?
I think so. I think I would hope to never play this. Like, again, that line in the sand, it starts even earlier, I think. I think it starts at 4 mana, and they just have to have stuff that matters. And when this doesn't kill a thing, and it's just a 4 mana, 4/2, that's so bad.
Like, maybe it's playable in a super removal-heavy red-black deck, but what are you going to do when your opponent plays a 4 mana 3/3 or all these 1/4s that are running around, right? Like, it's just not good.
No, I'm out on this. It's weird. So, yeah, so great or garbage is just garbage, but there's a lot of other cards to be excited about.
Oh, heck yeah. I think this set looks very sweet to me. It's cool that they had so much sweet stuff for Innistrad that they had to split it up into two formats like this. I am really hyped for this format.
Yeah, looks great. And we'll have our crash course ready for you at the usual time. Sorry again for the late start tonight, but you know, we had a lot of cards we wanted to talk about, and I think it was worth it.
Heck yeah. All right, great place to wrap us up. Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
Thank you so much to channelfireball.com for sponsoring this podcast. If you're heading over to CFB for any and all purchases, please use the code LOL when you check out to let them know we sent you there. You can check us out streaming. I'm at twitch.tv/LordTupperware. Ben is at twitch.tv/MrMetronome. Mr. is spelled out. We're both under those same usernames on Twitter, and you can tweet at the podcast at Lords of Limited.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.